And I've seen a guy who's been around the fellowship who seemed to suddenly get really serious about the program. And it's made a difference in what I see in John. He's a different guy. And a couple of months ago, I had the opportunity to be there when he spoke for the first time at an open AA meeting. And it blew me away. It's like, this is your first time, buddy? We got to get you up to a podium more often. And he just did an excellent job that night of carrying a message of recovery from the family disease of alcoholism. So we talked about getting him up here tonight so that he could share a little bit of that with you. And with that, I'd like to call John P. forward. Thanks. Hi, everybody.
Who are you?
Oh, come on.
My name's John, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, John.
Rock and roll, that's good. I've written down on my my bullets here. Where do I start? Well, first I'll start out welcoming the newcomers. I don't know if you know what you've stumbled upon, but you're the most important people in this room tonight, whether you like it or not. When I first heard that, several times I've come back to program, I've kind of reacted to that a little bit differently every time. So, and this is a good thing, because I find for myself, I get the most out of listening to newcomers. I find that I do so much of my growing, especially recently, by listening to newcomers. I'm the oldest of seven kids. I have two younger brothers and four sisters and two half-sisters that are older than I am. Catholic family, you know. My dad was an artist too, so anyway, when I was young, when I was a kid, I actually was pretty happy. I can remember a lot of good memories up until I was about six. I remember being 6 years old and waking up in the middle. Well, it was the middle of the night for me. I was 6 years old. It was probably 9:30. I don't know. And I went out, and it was. And I remember seeing my mom, and she was crying. She had tears in her eyes. And I remember distinctly that she was trying to protect me from something. And that stuck with me. That stuck with me. Well, I mean, I remember it now. I mean, it's been with me for the longest time. And that's the first time I ever felt something was different in my family. And I don't know if it was my first aha moment. You know, we talk about aha moments in the program a lot. But I think that's the first time I honestly feel I saw the effects of the illness. Mind you, I'm going to be calling it the illness. I have a real problem with the word disease. I can blame it on Trey Parker and Matt Stone and their episode of South Park when they rip on AA. But I like to call it an illness because my understanding now of the illness of, you know, of addiction, you know, particularly alcoholism, is that it's part physical addiction, part a mental illness, and a part spiritual malady. I mean, and that's just speaking from my own experience. You know, my physical addiction was being drawn towards the people who, you know, happened to be addicts or the children of, you know, other, you know, of other addicts. So where am I going with this? Oh yeah, my relationship with my dad from that early on really started to change after I saw that, because I knew something had been said, and I've always felt really protective of my mom, and I remember for the longest time I wanted to know what was wrong, and anytime I asked what was wrong, it was nothing was wrong, and you know I know now that, you know, it was just a mother trying to protect her child. And then it happened more often. And you know, this is years later, when you know, my mom had been, you know, my mom is in program, I'm proud to say. And I have another sibling that's in program as well. And wow, you know, I'm so grateful for that. And as the years went by, I could feel tension building up inside my body more and more. I thought maybe it was because I had to go to school, and because I was, you know, uncomfortable being in school. I never really liked school from the time I was a really small kid. And I remember my mom telling me when I was in kindergarten that the teacher said I should see a psychologist because I was so hyperactive. And honestly, when I think back, I that was me acting out. I used to sing a lot when I was a little kid in bed. I remember getting disciplined if I was ever rebellious, because I was a quite willful kid. So to deal with a lot of the emotions that I had, I would sing myself to sleep, and I'd sing out loud. And I remember Mom saying, you know, okay, John, that's enough now. You know, it's time to go to bed. Time to sleep now. And, you know, it's so funny, because what the program's done for me is it's solved so many of these problems and these puzzles that have bothered me for so long. I thought I was just some kind of a freaky mutant. You know, what was wrong with me? Maybe what people are saying was true. I'm this total nutcase. I'm this total head case. You know, something ain't firing right. What I'm really grateful for is that it wasn't one of those kids who's put on all sorts of medication when I was 5 years old, and like, you know, I could be a double winner right now. Oh, that could be a good thing, you know. But anyway, I started building up a lot of resentment towards my dad. And I remember wishing one day, it got to the point where I was wishing, man, I wish my dad would drop dead. And I opened up the door one day to go to school, and there was a mailman laying on the step. Just kidding. Sorry, Mom. So anyway, and looking back to it, I realized that just the family dynamic, it had changed so much. My mom seemed to have less patience with us, and that's because there were more kids coming along the way as well. But Mom just wasn't the who I knew, and you know, who I'd known before, and you know, it really bothered me, and I carried that for a long time. And thank goodness, when I first got into Alateen when I was, you know, I was 14, I attended my first meeting in 1987, I guess, and that was from the encouragement of my mom. She was actually kind of a little bit forceful about it, but you know what? I find myself reacting to the feeling of, oh God, I gotta do something my mom tells me again. But it was kind of neat to sit in a room full of strangers and wonder how my mom could have had the time to raise, you know, six younger siblings and then phone all these people and tell them what I was all about. And that was the first time I heard that it's a family illness. And wow, when I heard that it was a family illness, it doesn't just affect the person who has, you know, problem controlling their, you know, how much they drink, but that it affects all of us in some way or another. It just kind of reverberates like a rock in a pond, I guess. And wow, it confirmed so much of what I was feeling, and I didn't feel so alone. And I for the first time, I guess, I felt, I guess I could say I'm, you know, I use the cliche that I felt I belong, but it was something more than that. It felt comfortable. It felt like a really warm hug, I guess, sitting in a room and just listening to people talk and listening to people's voices quiver and shake and looking at the floor and, you know, all that stuff that you know, we go through, or that I went through anyway, and I've seen many people go through when they come to program. Because especially, you know, for me to be accepted, I needed to be doing something. I felt, you know, from the youngest, you know, as young as I was, I needed to impress. And so there were two things that I was pretty good at. I was good at drawing. I was a good sketch artist. I wanted to be a comic book artist. And, you know, I was born with a pretty strong body. So I gravitated towards, you know, some level of athletics. And I found it so different to look at all the things that I did in my life through going to my ALA team meetings, because no matter what my coach said to me when he yelled at me, no matter what, you know, my art teacher said, you know, when I was there, I always had my sponsor, Dale C., who I don't know where he is now, but I just want to give a shout out, man. Thanks a lot, because I wouldn't be here if I didn't have your encouragement. That had a grown-up in my life that wasn't critical, that wasn't ripping on me. The first thing he said to me was, "So how you doing? How's your week?" I didn't know how to react to that. I was so busy. I was so used to being told what to do and what I was doing wrong, or being asked to do something. It was the first time I felt in a long time that that somebody really wanted to know how John was feeling. I thought, and you know, growing up around, you know, jocks and athletes, and it's kind of a weird thing being in art, you know, being artistic and being an athlete, because so much, it seems to me, is very opposed. So feelings became the F word for me. And it was neat to have someone say, you know, it's okay, you know, you can feel that way. Because I felt myself really emotionally stifled, and the reason I was stifled is because I didn't know what I was feeling. And when I was first introduced to the steps, and being told that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable, I thought, well, does that mean I can't control what my pop does, or what anybody else who displays that behavior does? Yeah, that makes my life unmanageable. So it's their fault. I guess I should, when I go home, I should go tell them where they can go and how they can fix themselves, and I'll be happy. That's not how it works. When I was told that we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, am I really that insane? That just confirms the fact that I'm a nut. But I didn't feel alone for too long, because everybody else in that room was crazy. So if they went and blabbed about something that I did, I could have leverage and I could say, well, you did this, so we could hold each other at a standstill here. And that's about as far as, like, well, I guess to step three, I was able to turn what I was feeling over. And my higher power was my L-team sponsor for the longest time, because I got really cynical about religion. You know, I went to Catholic school and I heard all this stuff, and, you know, it, like, so many of us know, like, for me, I love to use the, you know, addiction and religion is a toxic mixture. It's like mixing vinegar and chlorine, like creating mustard gas. And it was really neat to have to learn the subtlety between what it meant to be spiritual, like what spiritual really meant. And that's what I've learned in program. So fast forward a little bit. LT meeting stopped. Sponsors, you know, kind of, you know how sponsors, you know, their term's up and no one's replaced. And I was about 18. I tried to go to Al-Anon meetings, but it was like in a room of 13 people that all sounded like my mom. It was a nightmare. because I felt guilty 13 times more. Because it wasn't so much that I was being accused, but it was what I was taking on and what I was feeling, thinking that all the things that she was upset about were my fault. And looking at that in retrospect, you know, that's the nature of my illness. I mean, how important do I think I am that I can cause my mom all the problems that she has and all these people? But I honestly believe that. So that scared the hell out of me, and I left. That wasn't very good. And I'd been doing some work with somebody else who was in the program. I'm going to talk a little bit about sponsorship because I'm still getting over a lot of issues that I have with sponsorship, and I'll kind of tell you why. When I was a kid, I was about 15. The first job I had, I had painting houses and doing things, and I got to know the kids of some friends who were in program, and I didn't, you know, I liked earning money, but I didn't like working with the person who was my boss and who I kind of look at as a sponsor, because he was the first dude that ever thought, or that I knew that was sicker than my dad. And I thought my dad was like the sickest person on earth. Just some of the things he would say and do. Even as a kid, it didn't make sense to me because, first of all, it went totally against what he would tell me what to do. Like do kind of the do what I say, not what I do, and just how I saw how other grown-ups acted, it wasn't normal. And I didn't use the word sick back then. It just made me really uncomfortable. And here was somebody in program. And that really shook me. Like, how can somebody be like this in program? And I wasn't strong enough in program yet to say, listen, you know, have boundaries and say, listen, I don't like the way you're talking to me. That's really not true. And all this, and, you know, these different sorts of situations I would have, you know, working with them. And things, you know, I found some things out about, you know, the family eventually broke up, and you know, they got divorced because, you know, apparently there were some things going on and that weren't, you know, with the stepkids and whatever, and that really scared me. Reminded me about some the things that I'd, you know, felt, you know, may have happened, you know, with my extended family, in particularly like my older sisters, my half sisters, and so that really scared me away from mentorship or any kind of sponsorship. And it's only been in the last couple of years that I've really been able to admit to that. I actually started having nightmares when I was, you know, about 3 years ago about it, and not knowing why I was. So I went to like to see therapists and whatever up at the U of S and told them what I was doing and saying, listen, you know, I'm in this program called, or I'm trying to get back into this program called Al-Anon, and I'm trying to stay fit and healthy and you know, not live a real sedentary lifestyle. Because it's easy to get like that when you're in Saskatchewan in the middle of the winter. I mean, I'd lived on the coast for years and years, and I came back, and it was, you know, it was kind of tough. Anyway, Shrink just looked at me and said, sounds like you're doing the right thing. Keep going to your Al-Anon meetings. It's a waste of time here. So that was kind of encouraging. That was pretty cool. And, you know, being on the coast and being back in program, see, and it was a long time. Like, there was a time, you know, in the 90s, early 90s, from the time I was about 18 until I was about, about 10 years, I guess, where I thought going to program and being healthy was going to 8 meetings a year. And I wondered why I wasn't any happier. Because I wanted, you know, kind of, I was working in a union, so I was like all about the least amount of work for the most amount of money kind of thing. And so I kind of carried into my program. And, wow. It wasn't working out. So when I got on the coast, and I was able to reinvent myself like so many people do and tell them I'm from somewhere else, I mean, exotic and all this other stuff. I started, like it was said earlier, you know, just being part of the fellowship. But in all that time, I'd never really worked the steps or really understood the steps. Like, I'd maybe gotten the steps through, but I'd never really done a real four. I was an Alateen. I did, you know, like a mini four, I guess, and a five with my sponsor. But never really sat down and done that. And, you know, I'm... just in the process, actually, of I could honestly say completing, you know, working my real my real first 4 and 5, and what a difference. And how what we hear in the program is that, you know, we arrive here just on time. You know, we could have would or should have ourselves, you know, 20, 30 years ago or whatever. But just like with the steps, it was the right time for me to do it. I didn't like myself too much. Well, not at all. I didn't even, it was a long time I didn't have a self because I was so busy doing things for other people. By the way, you know, the alcoholism is the only illness you can get yelled at for having. You know, someone doesn't say, hey, you got cancer. Smarten up. Hey, you got diabetes. What the hell is your problem? So, when I first heard that, that was rough, because it's really easy to demonize people who are addicts. It's so easy, you know, especially growing up with someone, you know, you're just, it was Godzilla storming through the house and you know, causing all sorts of havoc. And then you have the alcoholic. It's a joke, people. And that was me. That was me, you know, and my parents, you know, and my mom. And I was kind of happy to kind of be storming side by side with her, because it helped me understand her and her issues and her challenges, because, you know, she was having to be mom and dad, and that was so hard. I felt so guilty, so I took on being dad, tried to help my younger sisters. How does a 14-year-old kid tell a 12-year-old girl what to do? But I thought that was my job. And then my brothers came along, and it was the same kind of thing. And it nearly drove me nuts. So it drove me overseas. I decided I was going to do the geographical solution, and I figured if I got halfway around the world, that was far enough for me to have my own problems. And plonked down in Hong Kong. Tried to lose myself there. And I did. I lost myself. Couldn't find myself at all. I had absolutely no idea. Here I was, I spent all this money in a foreign place that I barely can put two words together to communicate. And I'm way worse off than I was in Canada. What's my problem? Here I'm thinking, I spent so many years keeping things together, thinking I kept things together. And what a rude, horrible awakening. So I did all sorts of different things, and, you know, when I could put that aside and my denial was cranked up to 10, I'd go and, you know, I was able to accomplish some things that I thought I'd always wanted to do, but wondered why when I accomplished them, I was feeling so empty. And one of the things was, like, I got to study at a martial arts school that I'd known about, that was legendary from the time I was about 5 or 6, I guess, and I also did some work in the movie industry. But despite all that stuff, I didn't feel so good. Why didn't I feel good? I had my Al-Anon reader with me, but, you know, it's kind of balanced my bed out, because, you know, I was in, like, 3 shorter legs and kind of stuck under there, and that's kind of the use that it had for the longest time. And I'll tell you, when I came back, the first thing I did when I got off the plane is I went to a meeting. And all I could do after that meeting was beat myself up and say, why are you waiting so flipping long? Why did you do all this stuff? You're wasting your life. My God, you're an old dude. You're 27, for God's sakes. Your life's almost over. And that's how I felt. I honestly felt that way. Because here I was, you know, I'd felt 40 most of my life, or 45, you know, like, or what I thought a 45-year-old felt like. And in so many other ways, I felt like I was 3. Who wants to hang out with a dude like that? That's pretty messed up. And funny enough, when I was on the coast in Vancouver, I couldn't find any Al-Anon adult children meetings. There weren't any. I don't know if there are now, but there sure weren't back in 2000. So I went to another program that was called ACOA, but kind of threw in everything and anything that someone wanted to bring. So when my grandmother got sick in 2004, and I was, my roommates had moved on and gotten married out there, out on the coast, I came back. And it was funny, I was at home, where I still am. So anybody who wants to see a single 35-year-old guy who lives with his mom, come see me after. I had a friend come over, someone I'd seen in University Steps of Freedom, and she'd asked me how I was doing. I'm doing okay. I'm taking care of mom, and I'm doing this, and taking care of grandma, and doing that, and all this other stuff that I was doing for other people. And she said, when are you going to take care of John? And I kind of froze, and hadn't thought about that one, I guess. I thought I was taking care of me. I get up and brush my teeth, you know, I comb my hair and do those things. But I don't think that was what she was meaning, and I know what she's meaning, what she meant by that now. I really didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I liked, what I wanted to do with my life, or what interested me. I could tell you what everyone else around me liked and what their favorite color was and what they did, but I couldn't tell you about me. I'll leave that up to you after listening to this to see if I'm getting any better. Because I'll tell you, even a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, someone asked me to stand up here and tell people about myself for 30 minutes or 40 minutes or whatever it is. 40 seconds maybe. You know, I'm John, I'm 5'10", and I'm standing here. You know, that's pretty much all I could give you. So, how has that changed me? Like, why is that different now? Well, for the last 3 years, I've been going to 3 or 4 meetings a week. I've naturally, nobody forced me to. Nobody told me to work the steps, but it's just, I've gravitated toward that. Well, what does working the steps mean? Well, I sit there and read them and ask, well, how do those apply to my life? How can that work for me? How can that make me a better person? Because the difference now, as opposed to the difference back then, is that every day, when I wake up and look at that alarm clock, I don't go, ugh. I go, okay, morning, HP, what are we doing today? You know what I'm like? I get destructive and really negative when I'm bored. So let's do something today. And if that happens to be that I wake up at noon, crack at noon, then I'll do what I can, the best I can with what I have. And that's really, waking up and turning my will and my life over to a higher power that I've gotten to know, not because I read it in some book and not because someone told me or that, it's a concept. It's because the consistent behavior, the consistent welcome that I've been given in meetings, the consistent acceptance, they don't look you up and down and, notice that you're being judged. People just look at you and smile. And that was really weird. I hadn't experienced that in a really, really long time. Something weird about the meetings here in town. I don't know. There's a lot more warmth than I experienced, anywhere else. Now, maybe that's just because I'm from here and I've spent so much time in the meetings here. But man, that was enough to be myself. If you're in a place just for an hour, for me, being in a place for an hour where I can just be myself and not worry about what someone else is going to say. Because I used to sit in the meetings and be like, okay, first person who starts to go to the left, okay, that's 5 more people. That's 4 more people until my turn. That's 3 more. That's all that would go through my mind. But when people would sit there and smile and thank me for sharing, or if I passed it, thanks, and still come and give me a hug after, wow, that was pretty cool. I said, maybe I got to work these steps a little bit more. Maybe I can see what's going on. And it's just been exposure. I mean, I can't tell you how meetings work. Anybody who's been here, been in a program long enough, I can't tell you how they work. I'd almost be giving away the meaning of life, I guess, really. I don't want to be robbing you of what's going on. And I guess I got 5 minutes left, so we're in injury time now. Anybody who listens to some watches soccer. Stoppage time. Okay, So where am I going from here? Well, first of all, I understand the illness of alcoholism is deceitful, it's conniving, and it's a liar. How do I know that? Because I used to spend most of my time comparing my insides to other people's outsides. I'm thinking, oh, well, these people think this of me. If I only had a, you know, many of us think, I mean, if I had a better job, if I was taller, if I had a better looking significant other, if I had a nicer car, I'd be happy. And what it's come down to, keep it simple, is that I wanted all these different things because I wanted to feel better. Didn't happen. You know, when I was working in Hong Kong in the red light district, I partied with people, did all sorts of stuff, but it was only temporary. Didn't make me feel better. Didn't give me a lasting feeling. Stepping into a meeting is the only thing that I've walked away from every single time feeling better than when I walked in. Can't tell you how it works. Can tell you that I think I got a real hunger. I got a real fervor for wanting to be better. One of the things I guess that's really helped me is that when I went and saw one of these therapists is that he had suggested that I might be suffering from depression. And I got that sorted out with my doctor and threw me on mood stabilizing medication. But that brought me to zero, I'll tell you. And for me, just because, the way I was born, something ain't firing properly. You do what you have to get sorted. And for me, that is like going to a meeting because I can, if I go off my medication and it doesn't matter how many meetings I go to, I just get this horrible feeling. Now, one day maybe that'll change, but right now it's something I have to accept. Incidentally, speaking of afflictions and things like that, I don't know if any of you have ever heard of an ailment called Dupuytren's contracture. It's it's an illness that was named after by a Parisian doctor about 200 years ago. And it's funny because I went to just look to get a routine thing done on one of my hands, and I felt this was like a bump on my third finger. It's, you can see right here. I thought it was just broken bones. And what it is, it's a hereditary illness. And I'll quickly get to the point about it. First of all, it's inoperable because I'd lose the use of my fingers. Oh, everybody feel bad for me. Come on, that's why I'm telling you this. Hey, I'm here because I'm getting better. I didn't say I was well. But anyway, it affects people who have a history, in the family history, of schizophrenia, epilepsy, depression, and alcoholism. When the orthopedic surgeon told me that, I thought, wow, that's weird. And I said, well, what is the cause? He said, it has to do with an enzyme that the liver releases. So this to me, after I was done crapping my pants and being all upset and what the hell's going to happen, because what eventually happens is that your hands will cramp up and do this and you lose the use of your fingers. You can get it operated on, but it'll consistently return. How much time do I have left? So, there's all sorts of there are remedies for it and whatever. And I remember being told that when someone who's been drinking for a long time, what happens is rheumatism, and that their hands will close up and their feet will cripple. And when I told the orthopedic surgeon that, he said, Dupuytren's contracture gets mistaken for rheumatism. And he said, if you have anybody close enough in your family that's been drinking a long time, check with their hands next time. Sure enough, I saw my dad for the first time in 17 years, a couple summers ago. His hands are like this. So this to me, just a couple months ago, was damning. I was upset and I was ashamed. Plus, it's for people, it usually doesn't happen in guys over 50. Now, passing for 50, I don't know. I don't think that's, I'll have to get a senior discount anyway, is it? Anyway, so I was pretty pissed off about that. But now, this is a constant reminder for me what I'm affected by, and physically, it's part of the physical illness of it, that I inherit genetically. But it's also a reminder why I ain't starting on the sauce anytime. I can throw a couple back and have some fun, but four or five is fine, but four or five dozen, I got problems. And incidentally, you know, if I'm drinking my face off, this happens more quickly, and your hands cripple. So, and for where I'm at right now, that's enough of a deterrent for me to ever start again, doing that. I'm going to just close, I guess, and say that the biggest gift that I've been given from, this program is not only just, a wonderful group of people that run age groups from people that are, young enough to be my nieces and nephews to people that are old enough to be my parents. And age doesn't matter. And the brightest people in my groups, my home groups, are some of the people that are chronologically the oldest. And I find that so flippin' freeing. I was saying to one of them one day when we were talking at coffee, saying, if it was only, this many years ago, I could have had so much more program. I said, but this time around, being this age and being 16 all over, we got life experience, so we have a better chance of being having fun and being impish and 16 again. It's taken all the things I've been ashamed of, things that have downed me, things that have made that I wouldn't tell a soul, and turn that around and honestly, looking back at that, if I hadn't gone through those things, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be here in this program. Yeah, it was going through hellfire, and I don't think I'd ever wish it on anybody or want to go through it again, but it's what's happened, and it's what's brought me here. So, and being the apologist that I am, because I used to rip on, rip on this program, like seeing all the cheesy slogans on the walls and people talking this weird lingo, and it's like, okay, how many of them do I have to sell and what's my commission? And I didn't find it. There wasn't any of that stuff. I don't have to sit there and tell people, I'm going to be a 4-star gold member and I'm going to get a watch and a, And this, the gift is even bigger, even though people aren't going to see it physically. Something inside's changing, because I got a lot of learning to do. I've never been so happy to be wrong about so many things in my life. And the way the program people, tell me, why don't you try this? In my experience, it's that. Not, you should, shitting all over you. Should do this, should do that, because I've done that to people forever. And being invited to do things like this, I'm lucky because, you have one of me to listen to, and I got all of you. And this is a reminder of what my higher power is all about, because look at my higher power looking back at me and smiling. I've never seen so many people smile at me before, instead of laughing at me, my pants are down, falling down like they did in grade 5 or something, or split my pants, So I'm great. I'm grateful for being asked to speak here, and thanks, everybody. Keep coming back, and love you all. That's it.
I want to find out more about this being a Gold Star member of Al-Anon thing. That's overachiever. John, we thanks so much for agreeing to do this, and we've got a little gift for you under here.
Thanks, everybody. It's fantastic.
With that, I'm going to turn it over to Ian, who, if I remember correctly, owes us a joke.
Thanks, John. It was great to hear your story. All right. Joke time. Some of these are pretty short. That's okay, because we're going a little over time, which is fine, too. I just have to find them. I was in one of our meetings once, and I'm the group rep for the university's Steps to Freedom meeting, and I really didn't like hearing what I heard at this particular meeting. When we were reading out the traditions, one of the people beside me said, "Yeah, our leaders are but twisted servants."